Hi, and thanks for being with us for another edition of the Student Press Law Center podcast. It's a monthly look at news and legal developments affecting the rights of those working in and around the student media. I'm Frank Lamonti. I'm the executive director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. The subject today is the rights of college journalists to distribute newspapers on the campuses of public colleges and universities, and what happens when those rights come into conflict with those running the institution. We're going to talk today about a situation that arose at the University of Florida, the home of one of the oldest, longest established, and most successful independent college newspapers in America, the Independent Florida Alligator. The Alligator is a real success story among the college media. It will, in the coming year, 2013, celebrate 50 years of independence from its institution, in which it's been able, uniquely among college publications, to sustain itself on advertising revenue and its own earnings without the need for university financial support. That independence has enabled it to exercise a watchdog function over the institution, and in that time it's built up an enormous following, 35,000 daily circulation and much more online. Their attorney is with us today, Tom Julin, a partner in the Miami office of Hunton and Williams, one of America's most prestigious and most successful corporate law firms, which has a very active media law and First Amendment practice defending the rights of publishers. Tom is one of my personal heroes, the first lawyer I ever watched argue a court case. And full disclosure, both Tom and I are former editors-in-chief of the Independent Florida Alligator. The situation we're here to describe, and I'm going to hand it off to Tom to sort of set us up and walk us through it, involves a regulation on the campus of the University of Florida, where the university tried for varying justifications to restrict the ability of the newspaper to distribute in the locations that it has historically enjoyed. And I guess, Tom, sort of set us up and take us from there as to what happened and how the newspaper was able to respond.
Sure. Well, thanks for the nice introduction, Frank, and complimentary remarks. This particular problem, and there have been a lot of them, as you know, between the Alligator and the University of Florida over the years. This one came up. Really, it started as an idea back in 2007, 5 years ago, when a university administrator got the idea that it might be a good thing to install modular news racks on the campus that would be owned by and controlled by the University of Florida itself. Before that, news racks were pretty much welcome on the campus as they are in the city of Gainesville, where the university is located. And there had been something in the neighborhood of 470 news racks installed throughout the campus. About 100 of those were Alligator news racks. The university was interested in just cleaning up the situation. As far as we could determine, there was no real animosity towards the content of the paper. They were just looking to improve the aesthetics, as you know, so many cities across the country have done with their news rack regulations. So they started to take a look at it, and they drafted up rules. The one thing that they did not do in the course of this studying this was consult with the Alligator, and
right. That
was very disconcerting because they didn't get any input as to how the rules should operate, if there was a rule or should there be a rule. They did consult with lots of other people, including the Gainesville Sun and the New York Times and the University of Florida College of Journalism, but the Alligator was very deliberately, I think, excluded from those consultations. And ultimately, what happened was that they did get the Board of Trustees of the university to pass a rule. They presented it as though it was a very non-controversial item. The rule was not vetted by any lawyers for the Alligator or any people at the Alligator. And it was then just announced that, okay, we now have this new rule in place, and we've ordered all these large modular units to replace the existing news racks, and you can lease them from us for a fee. Well, that came as quite a surprise to the alligator. The alligator had not been as diligent as it should have been in watching what the Board of Trustees was doing as far as regulation activity. So it was surprised to learn about this. And there was an immediate concern that this would have a very negative impact on the distribution of the paper, the advertising that the paper could attract. The paper, of course, is supported entirely by advertising now. And so there, initially the general manager started to talk with the university about, hey, can't you make some exceptions to this rule for our news racks? The alligator racks, as you know, Frank, are bright orange, and they feature a blue logo. Those are the University of Florida colors. And having those news racks out around the campus is probably the best advertising that the alligator has for itself. And the university's news racks were going to be these very large black news racks that would contain up to about 20 different newspapers, and they were going to be positioned in various places that would not be quite as prominent on the campus as the existing news racks. So that was the concerns, that no one would see these or that the alligator would lose its identity by going into those racks. So we tried to talk them out of it. It was what we initially did. We said, you know, you really haven't thought this one through. You've got this great independent newspaper that has built up over all these years, and you should have been a little more sensitive to how it might impact it. And the rule itself was filled with what I would call constitutional defects. It had extremely vague standards as to how you could get a license to use the university's news racks. The fee itself was not tied to the cost of the university administering this sort of program, which is a First Amendment requirement. There were no time restraints on when the university had to rule on an application to use their racks, and the university could throw newspapers out of the racks for basically any or no reason at all. So it was a very defective rule, and there was this concern about the actual impact that it would have on the ability to continue to attract readers. So we talked about it for really a couple of years, and asked the university to allow us to do some testing at certain sites to see what the impact of these racks would be. And we hired a top economist on a pro bono basis to help us with that sort of study. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the university was unwilling to yield, wouldn't change the rule, insisted upon compliance with their rule, and that's what then led us to file a federal lawsuit seeking to enjoin the implementation of the rule. So that's the basic background of how the lawsuit came to be.
Yeah. So I guess fast forward as to as soon as you filed this this complaint, then immediately the university comes to the bargaining table and starts to negotiate, perhaps a little more ardently than before. Now faced with litigation, and you're actually able over the course of several months to hammer out an understanding that I gathered just recently went before the university's governing board and seems to be taking hold.
That's right, and it's a deal that nobody is particularly happy with. I don't think the university is too happy with what has happened here, and the alligator is not particularly happy with the end result, but of course that's how great compromises are reached.
Right.
And what happened was, after we filed the lawsuit, the first thing the university did said, okay, we're not going to charge a fee to any of the publications to use our racks. They dropped that immediately without any sort of discussion. They then said, we'll change our rule, too. What you just tell us how you want to modify the rule so that it has sufficient criteria in there that would prevent it from being used to influence the contents of the paper. And The one thing they would not change was they wanted to make sure that they could still have their modular units installed, and that any news racks by private publishers near those racks would be removed. They said that we would allow you to leave other racks in place throughout the campus, and so approximately 40 to 50 racks would remain, and that's what we did. We drafted a new rule for them that we think is fairly close to compliant with the First Amendment. It still has some issues, I think, within it, but we gave them a revised rule that we thought that they could live with, and they said, okay, we'll present that to the board, and the board did just recently adopt that revised rule.
Well, so I want to, I guess, sort of use this experience and this proposal as a way to give folks out there a little bit of guidance about the boundaries of the First Amendment, both where, as a publisher, you might be able to stand on and insist on your rights, and then also, frankly, where the limits are and where an institution can legitimately curtail your distribution. So by way of setup, what are the boundaries of a public institution? Obviously, we're talking about a government regulator here, so somebody that's subject to First Amendment constraints. What are the boundaries within which they can interfere with a student publication or a leaflet or handbill or anybody who wants to reach an audience on campus? How much access are they constitutionally required to permit?
Well, when you're talking about state universities, you're talking about government ownership of the property that they
right.
exist on. And they can impose reasonable time, place, and manner regulations on that property. So they can say, here's where the news racks are going to go. Here's what the news racks should look like. Here's how they will be bolted down or not bolted down and that sort of thing. That are regulations that are not directed at the content and that are really just designed to maintain order on the campus. Now, not every campus does this. I think most campuses across the country have found that there's no need for a news rack regulation. And I think that's the ideal situation because news racks don't generally interfere with traffic and that sort of thing. Obviously, the publisher has an incentive to place news racks where the people are and not to place them in their way. And I think for the most part, that state universities can do just fine without getting into the business of news rack regulation. That's what I would advocate as the best situation. But they clearly can enact regulations. And what we saw in the University of Florida case is once you start down that road, it becomes a very complex exercise that you have to have procedures for determining how you're going to license the news racks, where the news racks are going to go, whether you're going to charge a fee, how you calculate the fee, if there's a disagreement about who gets a license and who doesn't get a license, what sort of procedure applies, what sort of appellate procedures apply. It's a very difficult task. And the university's goal, we found when they started down this track, was to maintain as much control over that process as possible and as much discretion as possible. And that's what got them into trouble and, I think, violated the First Amendment by adoption of a rule that gave them not just the ability to decide things like time, place, and manner, but the discretion to make decisions on the basis of the content of the paper.
You don't right, see right.
You don't, yeah, you don't see it expressed in the rule, but it's the vagueness of how the rule operates that allows them to make those decisions like that.
Right, and that's one of the red flags to always look out for when you have a regulation that interferes with the distribution of speech and communications are there boundaries within which the regulator must live so that you as the speaker know that if I satisfy these five permit criteria, I'm going to get my permit regardless of whether I'm a publication that's critical of the university or supportive of the university. And if there's the ability discretionarily to pick and choose among speakers based on the content of the publication or the viewpoint that they express, that would be a constitutional red flag, clearly.
That's right. And I think, you know, for any student newspapers that are seeing their university administrations moving towards this, it's the strongest advice I would give is to get involved in the process very early on.
Right.
Because the University of Florida, I think, was able to do this by excluding the alligator from the discussions. And had the alligator been involved, I think that we could have pointed out the difficulties that the university would encounter in starting to engage in this sort of regulation. It's very expensive, it's time-consuming, it requires lawyers, and it leads inevitably, I think, to conflicts down the road with the student press that need not occur if you don't try to engage in this type of regulation.
Right. And you mentioned that the rationale that was initially offered by the university was campus beautification and cosmetic appearance. There was a time when a new rationale, which was hurricane safety, actually popped into the discussion. Does it matter at all in a legal sense what the rationale is that the institution offers, and are there some rationales that will and won't pass constitutional muster?
Well, it absolutely does matter what the purpose of the regulation is. If the purpose is regulation of aesthetics, the courts have said that's okay. That's not something that is trying to control the content of the paper. And if it's something like safety, the courts have said generally that's okay too. Now, in the University of Florida case, I think it was the safety justification was clearly a tack on. There had never been any harm that NewsRax had done to anyone in hurricanes or otherwise.
Right.
But safety generally is recognized as an area where governments can regulate, so they'll offer that as a justification. And as I say, I think that was just a tack on here. If the regulation is based more directly upon concerns about the impact that the content of the paper might have on the campus, let's say that you have a rabble-rousing student paper, or you have an anarchist paper, or you have a Ku Klux Klan paper, or all the various papers that are out there, if you see that the regulation is motivated by that, then that will make the regulation itself unconstitutional because they're putting it in place for an unconstitutional purpose.
Well, I guess there might be some temptation among folks to say, why does this matter? You know, we're in the digital age. Everyone's walking around with a tablet. Why should we even care anymore if universities are going to banish newspapers to some remote corner of the campus? Aren't print papers kind of a dinosaur?
Mm-hmm. Well, we said to the university made that point. They said, we really think newspapers should be all electronic anyway. And they also tried to offer a environmental justification that it would be a greener thing to have everything distributed electronically. Well, newspapers, as I know you know, Frank, they make their money still from advertising that goes into the print edition of the paper.
Sure.
I think that's like 95% of the alligator's revenue comes from those print ads. The advertisers like to see their ads in a tangible piece of paper. They're not convinced that those people online are going to be going to buy their products and services. So newspapers in print, they may be going over the cliff, and all the electronic stuff may be ultimately putting them out of business. But state universities should not be pushing newspapers over the cliff by doing such things as imposing really onerous regulation of the distribution of the print papers on campus. And the green justification, we started to look at that, Frank, and I'm not sure it is a justification. The New York Times did a great story about all the power that data centers are consuming now, and there's a case to be made that all these laptops and iPads and electronic distribution, it's creating an even greater environmental problem than good old distribution of print newspapers.
Sure, not to mention the electronic junk that's created when you trade in your iPad 3 for an iPad 4 every generation, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah, right. The analysis isn't quite as simple as that. Well, college newspapers, really, although not immune to the advertising slump, have been one of the surprise success stories in this industry where people will still stop at the colorful orange box and pick up the free paper where they might not reach into the backpack for what is increasingly now 7, 8, or 9 quarters to get the daily paper. It really is a different animal and a different product and a different audience too.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
Well, just by way of wrap up and conclusion, I guess I am let's say the editor of maybe not even a well established mainstream newspaper. Maybe I'm the editor of some sort of an upstart newspaper. I want to get space on the campus of my public institution. I'm running into resistance from the institution. All the same justifications you're hearing: beautification, environmental, green considerations. How do I most effectively argue back against that, and how far can I go before I'm out on First Amendment thin ice?
Well, there's a couple different approaches. And one approach is what I would call the guerrilla approach, and that is to just ignore the regulators entirely and get your paper out there in any way that you can.
Right.
There's a risk associated with that, you may be thrown off the campus, you may have faced fines and other sorts of punishment, but there's been a grand tradition, I think, in this country of speakers getting their speech out in whatever way they can and not being so worried about complying with every regulation that is out there. If you're a little more risk averse than that, then I think engaging the regulators and making sure that you're getting at least equal treatment with others is an important thing. That was something that came up a long time ago at the University of Florida, where it had attempted to keep shoppers off of campus, and it felt that it had to back down and to allow any publications on campus because it was allowing the student press to publish on campus. So equal treatment is something to seek, although there is some authority that a state university can single out its student newspaper for separate, better treatment if it chooses to do so. It's not required to do that, but there's some pretty good authority from the U.S. Supreme Court that if you have a newspaper that is a not-for-profit corporation, that it's serving an educational purpose, it's consistent with the educational mission of the university, that it could have a regulation that says we're only going to allow the student newspaper to distribute, and we're not going to allow others to distribute. That's something that's not really been done anywhere, but you see that done for things like the use of university facilities. They'll say you can only have student organizations using those facilities. So that's something that could be done. And actually, we talked to the University of Florida about doing something along those lines that gave the alligator some special prominence on the campus, but it was unwilling to take the risk that it would be subjected to equal protection claims from other publications.
Well, Tom Julin, I want to thank you not just for being our guest and for providing some really useful educational tips about the First Amendment on campus, but for many, many years of dedicated, and I should say uncompensated, service to the student media. If you're a journalist in Florida, really any kind of a journalist, not just a student journalist, you have benefited from the work of Tom Julin and Hunton and Williams, and some of the best open meetings rulings in Florida have been won at great personal effort and expense by Tom, and we thank you for the many years of loyal service that you've given to the college media, and many more to come. So, if any of you out there who are interested in learning more about this area of the law, there is a section of the SPLC.org website, Know Your Rights, which contains legal guides about the First Amendment and specifically about the law of advertising and circulation and distribution on college campuses. We welcome you to follow the SPLC on Twitter. It's just at SPLC, to find us on Facebook, and to message us, SPLC@SPLC.org, with any questions. The hotline is 703-807-1904. And as always, we thank you for your support of the Student Press Law Center and invite you to join us next month.